Independent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for at least the next hour on this September the 5th on the West Coast, already now September the 6th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone.
What's going on? Well, last week, anyone that tuned in to Evident Footprints on Friday night got to hear two rebroadcasts of some shows that I did a couple of months ago with Jim Murray. And I had a death in the family. And Jim himself was taking care of some business, so it seemed appropriate with the holiday that we take a night off, which we rarely, or I should say seldom, do. And we're back raring to go tonight. This is always one of my favorite parts of the week because of the guests that we have on every Friday. It's also one of the least favorite parts of the week because I don't get to be in contact with my listeners over the weekend on Saturday and Sunday. But it gives me a chance to try to catch up with things on my website. Some folks are still asking why I'm a bit behind in some of the archives. And as I've alluded to on the air several times, there's been some issues with upgrades involving my internet provider and the servers and the software and all that. And it was a real nightmare for a couple of months because of these changes that were taking place. And they were working bugs out in a new software system. And it created a lot of anomalies on just about every page on my website. So I had to redo a lot of these things to get these bugs removed. Graphic anomalies and audio anomalies. In fact, the audio anomalies almost wiped out all the podcasts, although on my directlightproductions.com website, you can still listen to any of the archives that originally were posted, as well as the descriptions that go with them. Problem with the iTunes subscription is going to be worked out, I'm promised. So, and when that gets worked out, it'll be very, very easy and very simple. In the meantime, you can subscribe to BBS Radio's archives for a very small fee. It's around $25 for a whole year. You can download any of the archives on bbsradio.com. And there are always new programs coming out. We have three talk show streams as well as the 24-hour-a-day music stream on Station 4. And they're all worth listening to. So I recommend doing that just to be able to go in there and get any of the shows, because I'm only posting my shows on my website, and to get them from BBS Radio, you do need to subscribe, but you help us keep the archives up and available to you, and it helps us defray the costs of the bandwidth. That said, I'd like to just give a small note. I had the opportunity over the past couple of days to finish this monstrous piece, which is part three of the Three Stooges Go to Washington. And there's a lot of really eye-opening stuff in that article. And, of course, the piece is about presidential candidate Barack Obama. And I know people are very anxious. Now, I've been told by the Observer, and I've known this for a good week or so, that we are going to be also going to press on the 8th of this month, which is next Monday. So this has been a tremendous undertaking just because of the amount of information that's in the article and the amount of what we need to do. Now, I'm being getting a chat message here about the prices of the archives, so I'll come back to that in a minute. But I want to stay on track with my train of thought right now. So the article will be coming out, going to press on Monday, and you're going to see some things that you've not seen in the mainstream media. And when it's all said and done, it's going to make sense that we're not getting, again, from the mainstream media. It'll be very apparent that the media has been nothing but a propaganda tool trying to avoid critical issues. And even on another level, the things that I've incorporated into this research is so far out in left field that by the time I sew all the little dots together, it's going to make a quite a different picture, but you are going to feel that you understand what's going on, how someone can rise to popularity so quickly and really without any substance. Now, that said, I had the opportunity because I was able to spend a little time actually doing what I like to do and what many of my listening audience and my readers like to do, and that's go to some other websites and see what type of articles are posted. And I found a very interesting video that was posted on YouTube where there was one of these town meetings and Barack Obama was questioned by a young man. Very brilliant question, asking him specifically to state unequivocally if he was a member of the CFR. And the second question had to do with his thoughts on the proposed North American Union. That's the illegal and the covert joining together of the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And he asked this question sort of in a two-parter, and Obama sort of made a quip about not having a card, a membership card to the CFR, and acted basically as if he didn't know what it was. It was quite evident that he was not being totally honest. I could say he was less than honest in his response, very less than honest, and then on the North American Union, it was just nothing but misstatements. He denied that the security, prosperity, partnership highway was being built through Texas up to Canada. He did not even refer to the intention to turn Kansas City into a Mexican port right in the center of the United States. And basically evaded the question or lied about the response. And it was quite evident that his syntax and his delivery, his choice of words, his stuttering, he said quite a bit, and it was, and I just said it, it was obvious that the question caught him totally off guard. And he was not prepared as to how he was going to spin his answer. But the video itself was something like Barack Obama caught lying about his ties to the CFR and the NAU. I thought it was an excellent idea to post that video. The young man that asked the question in the two-part fashion he did actually got some applause for asking the question. Strangely, the audience applauded the snide remarks that Obama made, and as I watched the video, I shook my head in disgust at how brainwashed some people can be, how ignorant they can be of things that are going on. I've seen the maps of the North American Union, the proposed maps to take over all the nation's highways and give certain portions of the highway, the collecting of the fees to Spain, or give the contract to set up sensory equipment to China, and on and on and on. So that's something that will probably become a topic for a future show. And if you have a chance, check out YouTube for that video. I recommend you can see for yourself. When you couple that video with what I'm coming out with in the next part of the Three Stooges Go to Washington, you'll see very clearly that Barack Obama is not being honest about who he is and what he stands for. And that is going to be very evident. In other words, his comments are not going to hold water. And with that, that's my segue to tonight's guest. He is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and he's a very good friend. He is our honorary science advisor, and I don't feel I really give him enough credit for the quality of material that he brings every week to Evident Footprints, and I just want to take a moment and especially thank him in front of the listening audience for all the hard work and the dedication he puts forth to bring you the truth. This man knows science, and he knows areas of science which are not even his expertise, and I hear more truth come from him regardless of the topic that we discuss. Whether we're on the air or off the air, he's a walking encyclopedia of information, and it's not the spun encyclopedia, it's the truth. With that, I'd like to welcome again to Evident Footprints, back from a one-week hiatus, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, how are you this evening?
Just fine, Don. Thank you for that intro.
Well, you know, I could go on probably for half an hour and talk about all the things that I know you're capable of doing, and your accomplishments, your inventions, and all of that. But who could talk about those things better than you? So
I was going to say that's something we could do on another show, you know.
Yes. Before we get into anything, I guess we have changed our archives now. So the prices I quoted are a bit different, and I have to say that probably now, because we're streaming, and Seth, you can give me a yes if that's the reason. We're streaming at 96K, which is much, much higher bandwidth than we were streaming before at 56K and on station one. And I know that that's more expensive in and of itself. Our one-year archives are $59.95. I feel like a fool right now. That is a one-year subscription to all the archives. And then we have a three-month subscription of $19.95. That's on all the archives on BBS Radio. Or you can go with a 30-day archive subscription for $7.95. That's very reasonable. But it you get ahead if you do the one-year deal. I can tell you that. And then you don't even have to think about it. Now, I'm looking at some of this here. It says subscription to all the archives on BBS Radio for a period of 30 days. Your subscription will automatically be renewed until you log in and cancel your subscription. A one-day archive pass is $1.95. And that's like a cup of coffee these days, or a candy bar. This is a recent change, and I'm sure a lot of it has to do with many of the upgrades that we're doing on BBS Radio. So just wanted to throw that out there, and then I can forget that. Sorry for that interruption, Jim.
Not a problem. So, Don, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great. You know, I feel like I've got the whole world off my back. I've got the whole world off my back. Just having completed a major portion of research. You know, this was a very, very complex issue to research. And there weren't a lot of facts on the table. So I had to do a lot of digging. And as I so often say, I went down the rabbit hole, but this time I had to sort of brush off the turds, if you know what I mean. You know, when I resurfaced.
Well, I look forward to reading your article personally, and I'm sure the readers feel the same way. And let's hope that it gets all the notoriety it deserves.
Well, I just want the truth out, and as everyone else does. So this is one of my most daunting efforts, and I feel very confident that the truth is out, and it'll be there for people to see for themselves. So you heard my little comment about Barack's statements not holding water, and I know that that's something that we were going to talk about tonight in a general context as well as a specific context. And that said, I always let you begin your lecture by handing the mic over to you, and that's what I'm going to do right at this moment. So have at it, Mr. Murray.
Well, thank you, Don. And, of course, water is an amazingly wonderful substance. We owe it more than we can ever really imagine. But it's interesting, too, that that you started off with this intro involving truth in politics, because it seems as if not only is our water source on Earth soiled, but the same pollution has invaded the political and governmental systems all over the planet. And it just seems that we are approaching some sort of a nexus in which we are either going to purify ourselves and elevate to a different plateau of consciousness, or we are literally going to go down the sewer. So with that as an opening remark, I'd like to refocus on the importance of water. And together we are going to cover a variety of interesting topics. Of course, you realize I'll never be able to cover everything, because water is just an amazing creation, and it's involved in every aspect of reality. But I will try to start off by mentioning some of the qualities of water in general, just to get the attention of our listeners, and then move on to some interesting specifics. So obviously, the most important thing in my opinion, to start with is the fact that the human body is mostly water. And all of us listening, I presume, have bodies. So it would be interesting to realize that the blood, for instance, is effectively 95% water. And while muscle tissue and other body tissues are essentially 75% water. So that's a lot of water. So each of us are mostly water. And that's something we should remember. It's interesting, too, that the planet that we live on, which is also a created entity with a body, basically is almost the same percentage. It's about 71% water, at least on the surface. So we can get into the subsurface situation some other time. The highest of all of the chemical compounds, water has the highest specific heat. The only thing more capable of holding heat is hydrogen gas itself. Water freezes at 32 degrees and boils at 212 degrees Fahrenheit, which probably most people have some idea about. And the interesting thing is it has its maximum expansion point just before freezing. And the interesting thing about water, even though it's a liquid, it has an infinitely variable crystal structure. And you you can get some idea of how that's possible just by thinking about snowflakes, Don. I can't imagine that anybody hasn't examined the almost infinite variety of snowflakes that come down, catch them on your sleeve and just look at them, or, you know, maybe they've seen pictures of them under microscopes or what have you. No two snowflakes are alike. And when you consider how many millions, or I should say probably trillions, of snowflakes actually fall in a good-sized storm, that means that there's an enormous, almost infinite variety of crystals in the solid state. And it's the same in the liquid state, in the sense that it can take on a whole host of potential molecular and crystalline shapes, which actually gives it characteristics which are pretty incredible, and we'll touch on that a little bit later on. The reason why it's important is because it has been discovered that water literally stores information. And, you know, the mystics and psychics throughout history have been calling that to our attention, but now it is a proven scientific fact. Also, we've already mentioned this, but more specifically, water is the major building block in all living things, and also in our atmosphere. Water vapor in the atmosphere, which eventually interacts with the surface in the form of rain and snow and sleet and all that sort of stuff, is a vital component of our atmosphere. And it continues right out into the universe. I mean, the interesting thing is you've often heard me talk about alchemy. Alchemists used to describe the waters of interstellar space as a very important ingredient in their preparations, and they referred to that as the sea in which the stars float. So there are actually theories about the fact that water in a very rarefied form is a key component of the ether itself. So with all those interesting little attributes about water as an introduction, I think it makes good sense to now focus on some specific things. And Don, one of the most important ones, which really makes everything go on our little planet here, is the Earth's water cycle itself. Now, it's a simple thing, and I'm sure everybody knows about it, even if they don't think about it. And, of course, that happens to so many aspects of our reality. We are so familiar with it that we take it for granted, and we never really contemplate it. And that's true about everything, including life itself. But the evaporation cycle, or the water cycle, is terribly important, because without it, this planet would be a really different place. And naturally, it works by the energy from the sun causing evaporation of our oceans and lakes and rivers and streams, which causes the water to rise to in the form of a vapor into the atmosphere. And once it reaches certain densities in the upper atmosphere, then it begins to coalesce. The well-known storm fronts and weather patterns then deliver it back down to the surface in the form of rain or other forms of precipitation. Well, interestingly enough, this is responsible for everything that we know, if you're actually boil it down and into its basic essence. I mean, without rain, you wouldn't have any crops, you know. Without standing water in the form of lakes or rivers or other or oceans, for that matter, we wouldn't have that form of transportation. We wouldn't have drinking water. We wouldn't have sources for irrigation. We wouldn't have reservoirs for our cities. We wouldn't have a lot of things. So that cycle itself is an extremely important one, and in today's world, it's even more important because one of the things that is responsible for in a great many instances is the generation of electricity. Water fills up various lakes and like Lake Mead, for instance, which is then headed by a huge dam, and water rushing down through the inner workings of the dam turns turbines and generators and produces electricity. And so water touches every part of our lives. And even though it is definitely taken for granted, we as living and hopefully intelligent beings should never really take it for granted. It's one of the most key components of all creation, and we can't live without it. And getting back momentarily to the power generation aspects of water, I would just like to interject, since anybody who's heard me speak before must realize I am a very avid fan of Nikola Tesla's. Tesla put the water, the energy aspects of water into play in the design and construction of the first major power plant in the United States using three-phase generators of his own design. And that was situated, of course, in New York State up in Niagara, along the Niagara River, just in the vicinity of the falls. And so he was a pioneer not only in the electrical field, but also in its practical utilization and in with hydropower. So, Don, that's a mouthful, I guess, for an intro, but as you realize, there's so many aspects of water. I just figured I'd throw as much stuff out there as possible just to get the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And as usual, I would appreciate any observations or comments that you choose to interject.
Well, when you mentioned the water cycles, obviously those of us that pay attention to weather patterns and what's going on on a daily basis, you know, we can look at our yards, our vegetation, our lawns, our trees, plants, shrubs, flowers, gardens, and we notice from time to time we either get an excess of water, we get so much water that we have flooding, where water becomes destructive in a sense, the ground can't absorb it fast enough, or it becomes so saturated that the water just sits on the surface and then interferes with buildings and transportation and with life itself. It can carry away animals, people. And what comes to mind is our interference with nature, with some of the covert programs that are going on to affect weather patterns, weather manipulation. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are along those lines as to how much we tip nature out of balance by, let's say, weather engineering, as an example. And we know that they are creating floods intentionally and hurricanes, that the precision with which they're predicting where storms are hitting. You know, the weatherman can't tell us whether it's going to be sunny tomorrow or rain, and yet they're predicting these massive hurricanes with pinpoint accuracy. Any comments about that?
Oh, my gosh, yes, I have lots of comments about that. Well, first of all, getting back to your opening comments about the unusual rains and storm activities and whatnot, I think that it's very, very important, and I've said this on other shows, but I'm going to re-stress it tonight, that people realize that the Earth is a living entity. And I don't care how far out that sounds, anybody that really is plugged into a higher understanding of the way the Creator set things in motion would have to agree that the Earth has a certain consciousness. It has components which give it life and function. And on a certain level, it is a conscious creation. And its purpose is to provide a home for all of the wonderful life forms that live here. And we are supposed to also fit into that picture in a harmonious way. And of course, as the obstinate creatures that we are, we prefer to do things our way rather than God's way. And sooner or later, this is going to cause real problems. And my guess is that it's going to be sooner rather than later. Now, I agree with you also that there are direct interferences which are planned with these manipulations and weather experiments utilizing electromagnetic forces and the orgone streams and things of that nature, which I'm sure the government doesn't talk about, but we all know they're doing it. And those are probably responsible for a lot of the nonsense that's going on around the world. But even if we weren't doing that, we are interfering with a very delicate balance. And it's becoming more and more evident, especially to the geologists and the weather scientists and the people studying the so-called global warming situation, that Earth is really, really a fragile thing. Now, we all know that in a human body, it's amazing that you can even be alive and live for an average of 75 or 80 years in reasonably good health, because there are so many things that can go wrong and kill you that it's incomprehensible that each of us lives as long as we do. And yet, very small changes can result in very traumatic outcomes in the human experience. If your sodium levels are off just a little bit, if your potassium levels are off just a little bit, your heart arrhythmia, can start. Kidney failure can result. Blindness can result. Liver failures. All kinds of problems, and they can all be traced back to relatively small disturbances in the incredible complex and balanced system that we identify as our bodies. Well, the planet is no different, Don, and as everybody who will really give it some thought will have to agree, that we are not making small changes, we are making enormous changes. And it's amazing to me that old Mother Earth can sustain herself under these conditions as well as she has. But from the time of the beginning of the Industrial Revolution right up to the present day, we have really, really changed this planet, mostly through ignorance and greed. And it's already starting to bear negative fruits. I mean, people don't talk about it, but literally thousands of species have been annihilated by our species in very recent times. And I'm talking about perhaps the last 400 years. And then in the more recent cycles of destruction, starting with the Industrial Revolution and then continuing into the present age, we've got acid rain, we've got pollution of aquifers, we've got, oh my gosh, just untold damage being done. The biomass in the oceans is already affected because of the fact that we are treating the oceans as bottomless pits and dumping sewage, chemical waste, and only God knows what else they put in there. And, you know, the attitude is like it goes into a black hole and we never see it again, but that's not what happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, these chemicals that we use in industry and pay so little attention to, which we dump in our rivers and streams and even in the ocean themselves, they're now showing up in all forms of marine life. They're showing up in the same fish that we eat. They're showing up in bird life that feed on the fish. they're showing up in human beings who feed on the fish and animals that eat fish. And, you know, we are essentially terraforming this planet, whether we know it or not. And because we are departing from the plan of nature, I can guarantee you unequivocally that the outcomes are going to be negative and they're going to be harsh. It's just a question of when. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry I get all carried away there, but unfortunately, this is a passionate subject for me, and I like to put it right out there the way I see it.
Well, that's exactly why I asked you that question, to get that feedback. Now, while you were talking about all that, and I know that you didn't intentionally neglect this particular issue, but we have water that's given to us. You know, it comes from a filtration plant somewhere in our vicinity, or it's brought in via pipelines that run from places that do have filtration plants. And it's usually done under some sort of agreement. And it's just accepted the way it is, that if they put chlorine or fluorides in the water, or they run it through filters that are laden with lime and settling tanks. I've been to some water treatment plants and spent many hours there observing the process. And they may conduct a pH test, but there's never any consideration, not to mention what this water does to those who drink it. And I'm speaking about ordinary tap water. But think what it does to Earth itself to regenerate that. The byproducts of aluminum manufacturing being consumed into a human's body is got to be one of the most toxic substances we can put inside our bodies. In fact, our bodies don't have the capacity through our normal everyday experiences to get rid of those substances. And then that is regenerated into the gray water, which is regenerated back into the drinking water. And they're coming up with these concocted, insane ideas of taking human excrement and coming up with ways to turn that back into drinking water. I mean, certainly we can be a bit more creative without going to those extremes. Don't you agree?
Well, I agree, but you know, I honestly believe at this point that anything can happen, because I'm convinced that the people that are running the show are mad. Literally. They're mad. I mean,
yes.
There's no question about it. I mean, you don't even have to be politically left or right or up or down or whatever to see my point. Nothing that's going on in the world right now bears the hallmarks of sanity. And the human race as a whole is totally neurotic as a result of it. You know, if you cage any animal and or any group of animals and treat them the same way that we are treated, the cattle that we are, you wind up with something totally unnatural in the behavior patterns. Look at all the murders. Look at all the theft. Look at all the nonsense that goes on in the world. And tell me if we are not a long ways from the mark. You don't even have to know what the mark really was to realize that we're not on it.
Pardon me for laughing. It's so true what you're saying, and you're saying it with such an economy of words. So, I agree. And it's a topic in and of itself. We could do a whole show just on that, couldn't we?
Yeah, we certainly could. And I'll tell you what, though, I don't want to neglect the ultimate implication of what you were intending. I mean, we don't know why they put all this crap in our water. I mean, they give you cover stories like, you know, the chlorine kills bacteria, the fluorine is good for your teeth. But they don't tell you also that fluorine, in certain concentrations, absorbed into the brain over a period of many years, induces a docile and complacent attitude. Doesn't that sound familiar? I mean, you know, we can't be any more docile than we are. We are robbed, literally, of everything imaginable, mostly money, mostly various social freedoms, the right to live the way God created us, that we've been robbed of our environment, we've been robbed of our birthright, we've been robbed of every damn thing. And what do we do about it? We yawn and say, yeah, isn't that something, the way life is, you know? Hand me another beer. And, this kind of stuff is eventually going to lead to our own demise.
Yes.
If we don't do something about it. So I can't believe that, you know, the spine of Americans are removed at birth. You know, but why is it that we're so damn spineless? Well, I think part of it is because of what they're feeding us. You get into this bit about what's in the water, well, that's only part of the argument. What's in the food? We don't even know what the heck we're eating anymore. I can't pronounce half of the ingredients that are posted on a simple box of cereal, for goodness sake. And I firmly believe if you can't pronounce it, you shouldn't eat it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, well, we accept all of this as if it's a natural way of life, and it isn't.
Yeah, there's a lot of deceit behind this. And speaking of fluoride, you did mention, you know, one of the things they tout about the fluoride in the toothpaste. There is not a shred of evidence that supports that theory that it's good for your teeth. Your teeth happen to be good sponges for taking more of the fluoride into your bloodstream. And that's the reason why they put it in toothpaste. They can mask the taste of it with the flavorings that they put in toothpaste. Simple. I mean, it's not very complex. I've talked to a number of excellent dentists that have come out and flat out said that it's a lie. It's always been a lie. And they've been doing this for how many years? 50 years?
Well, I remember, I was going to say, I remember my dad being duped into that whole thing when I was still in grade school. And he mentioned how they were now going to start introducing fluorine into the water supply. And before that, they used to insert it into your teeth in the most nauseating manner. I don't know if you ever had it done, but they take a wax mold of your teeth and they put this disgusting white cream on the mold and put it back in your mouth and make you basically masticate on top of it. And that's whatever that chemical was, it was a carrier for fluorine, and that was called direct tooth fluoridation. And I had that done several times, and I'll tell you, the flavor was absolutely beyond description in a negative way. And mm-hmm. the results were that you were nauseous for days after that. So maybe we're not supposed to remember that. But I have pretty good teeth, but I really attribute that to the genetics of my family, not to the garbage that they put in my mouth when I was 7 years old.
Mm-hmm. The only thing that reminds me of that, yes, I had it done a couple of times. The only thing that reminds me of that is going down the rabbit hole like I've been doing the past 3 months and coming out and brushing myself off. So, yes, it had a nasty peppermint, excessive peppermint overtone to it, to try to mask the taste. But it was just two substances that didn't blend together. One trying to overpower the other. Anyway, that said, you know, I didn't intend to take us off into the land of toothpaste and prehistoric dentistry, but it's worth mentioning the substances that they hide in the drinking water, in the regular tap water. Not to mention the recycling of the water and the drugs now that are in there, because you've got people flushing.
Absolutely, I mean that's another amazing thing. Now they play this issue down also, but you know, water. In the old days, when you did want to buy bottled water, it came in glass water, and some of the earliest coolers had glass vessels on top, because I remember my grandfather's office, they had a water cooler, and it had the typical big glass jar on top. But nowadays, of course, glass is too expensive, so we've gone to plastic. But actually, I think that that's a lot of crap, because, to be honest with you, the real reasoning, if you follow the almighty dollar, is that, first of all, plastics are manufactured from petroleum in 99% of the cases, and so that's a much better reason to use plastic than glass, especially if you happen to have stock in the petroleum companies. You know, and secondly, the content of the water is again in question. Now, I think it's England and other parts of Europe, the content of the plastic is leaching into the water mock estrogen compounds, which are absorbed by the body and in many cases fool the body into thinking that it's real estrogen. And in women, this is accelerating all kinds of hormone problems, including breast cancers. And in men, it's having the effect of demasculinizing them. I believe it was England where they said that sperm counts in men are down to the point where they're actually having trouble, you know, creating children. And it's directly traceable to the fact that their estrogen levels, even though it's mock estrogen, are skyrocketing. Now, I find it very difficult to believe that that this is fairly well-known information. It's been around for quite some time, and I have not heard one problem, one group, or one, cry from anybody to return to glass bottles. Everybody's drinking water out of these plastic containers, totally oblivious to the overall effects that it's having on us. And I find it difficult to realize that the people that are behind all this don't know it. And I think that it's just part of the overall reasoning that we have to contend with. It puts mm-hmm. money in the coffers of the petroleum companies. It feeds the megalithic medical industry that we have in the United States. Like, I mean, cancer is basically an industry. Let's face it. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. So, I mean, everything that we've talked about tonight, you could do a show on, and it would probably be a 5 or 6 hour show if it wasn't for the fact that time is a premium. Because yeah. you can't ever get to the bottom of it. It's so bad. And that's the mm-hmm. truth.
Well, yeah, it's true what you're saying about the different types of plastic. And they have, these plastics are rated to carry certain types of substances, certain types of liquids. And it seems like the ones that they've chosen for bottled water, for example, are the most dangerous. They have the highest capacity to toxify us, for lack of a better word, to contaminate us. And then if you get into foods, just one food item, margarine, which is sold in plastic tubs with plastic lids, and margarine is one molecule away from becoming plastic. Think
right.
about
and
that.
I was just gonna say it's almost the plastic itself.
And
by definition.
And that was touted as being healthier for us than butter. Now, if that isn't the pot calling the kettle black or calling the kettle plastic, I don't know what is. It's like you said, it's just pure insanity. And then some of these bottled water companies are actually selling tap water. They've actually admitted people have tested the water. You know, you drink, I won't mention the, I'd recommend people not drink bottled water. So there's no point in singling out any one brand, because even if the water itself is pure, you've got it in a plastic bottle. If it's sold in a plastic bottle, it's going to leach into the water, and you're going to consume it when you drink the water. There's no way to filter it out. At least not, you know, riding in your car or on your bicycle or, you know, going for a walk in the woods or something. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, and I was going to say, too, that even these filtration plants, you know, that are supposedly purifying this recycled water, we have to realize that if you really question, you know, what they're doing, it's to standards that are allowable by the government. And God only knows what that means. But there, it's a known fact that a lot of the most deadly toxins cannot be thoroughly removed from the water. They're here to stay. And our body, as you pointed out, is not designed to cope with that. And the best that it can do in eliminating this stuff is that it stores a lot of these undesirable compounds in the only accessible dump that the body has to offer, and that's the fat tissue. And if you look at the Americans as a separate subspecies of the rest of humanity, we are the fattest and most out of shape in the general population of all the people of the world. It's a well-known fact. And so, you know, part of it is the poor diet. Part of it is the stress and lack of exercise. But a lot of it may have to do with the fact that the body is creating a dumping ground for all this garbage that it can't get rid of. And we're carrying it around with us for life. And then it gets buried along with us when the time comes.
Yeah, well, there may be a blessing in that. If it ever comes to the point to where we have to defend ourselves and we're disarmed, there are some people that can just sit on someone and take them out that way. You know? Oh, what a thought.
Yeah, I guess we could refer that as to that as a gravitational squash. But,
well,
I think that that's going to require a great deal of perfecting before it can be used in a military context.
Now, you were mentioning the impact that these excessive levels of estrogen have on certain people. And I suppose that you could probably determine who might be leaning in that direction by who's making a career out of politics, couldn't you? You could determine who's drinking bottled water. I had to say that. I had to get my political jab in there.
Well, you're much more proficient in the political arena than I am, and so I say... Go ahead and jab. I have no problem with that.
Okay.
But if we want to return to the main subject.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Then I think that the next thing that I wanted to touch on was the importance of ocean currents around the world in regulating weather systems and also the planetary distribution of temperature. You know, our planet is tipped at 22.5 degrees with respect to the ecliptic, and that means that the sun at various times of the year is going to be delivering most of its energy at various latitudes depending on where the planet is residing at that time. And because the majority of the Earth's surface is water, or certainly a lot of it is, the water winds up being the distribution agent for this thermal energy. And this is achieved by the many currents, you know, that constantly circulate around the globe. Two of the ones that are best known would be the Gulf Stream, which has always been a major factor in the weather, and most people, I think, realize that. And then there's the Japanese current, which is the equivalent in the Pacific side of the world. And the thing that I guess most people don't realize is that even though the ocean is a huge reservoir of salt water, these currents almost behave like rivers that flow within the ocean. And it's a totally amazing phenomenon. As a matter of fact, I've often wondered if it isn't linked to electric currents, because the crossing of the equator or the change in direction of these huge currents, if you factor in the Earth's magnetic and electric fields, it's hard for me to accept the fact that all these things don't work together. Just because we don't necessarily understand the linkages doesn't mean it isn't so.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the possibility of these currents being like eddy currents, you know, in a huge generator, and possibly propelled by interactions with the Earth's magnetic and electric fields, and the fact that the Earth is spinning and possesses a Coriolis acceleration and centrifugal and centripetal forces. All these things combine and form these rivers that flow around the planet and distribute the temperatures and what have you. And the reason I bring this up, Don, is because now you have this big political commotion involving the situation with global warming. And I don't know enough about the overall picture to know for sure whether man himself has created the global warming or whether we're just going through a cycle that would have come anyway. But I'll tell you this. The planet is changing, and it's changing very, very rapidly. And this is something that has raised alarm in meteorologists and geologists who take the trouble to study this stuff. And one of the major things that's happening, which is directly linked to these currents, and I might add that the currents are changing their patterns as well, and that's been duly noted, is the fact that the North Pole is losing ice at an unprecedented rate. And the South Pole, despite the global warming situation, is gaining ice. And that's because the currents are flowing in new patterns, and even though the average temperature in the rest of the world, particularly the Northern Hemisphere, is up by whatever it is, 2 degrees or something, it seems as if the condition is the opposite in the South Pole. Now, that might sound like a ho-hum statement to a lot of people, but consider this. The ice masses at the poles are fairly similar in size. And if it gets to the point where there is no ice at the North Pole and there's an additional accumulation of ice at the South Pole, the enormous mass of Antarctica could actually be a trigger agent to cause an angular rotation and a realignment of the planetary axis. And we talked about this on several other shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so here again, you know, the interesting and almost scary interaction between water and the fate of humanity. I mean, if that was to happen, I guarantee you that the architecture of the entire planet would be rearranged, and it would do so very, very rapidly. Just imagine if Antarctica wound up at the equator and the rest of the continents were duly shifted around as a result of that displacement. I mean, you'd have everything which is now in an Arctic area would wind up in the equatorial zones, and the other continental masses would be shifted as radically, and anyone that survived that type of a planetary cataclysm would find themselves in a new Stone Age, for lack of a better description.
Yeah.
So,
if I could.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if I could comment on the remark you made about global warming, And this is both from, let's say, a metaphysical perspective and a maybe a more realistic scientific perspective than we're given. And I don't want to take any credit away from Al Gore. He's made millions off of his book and received all kinds of awards and everything for brainwashing the masses into blaming all of this global warming on the people that drive cars, to the exclusion of buses and jets and the underground nuclear boring machines that they're using to create tunnels and underground bases. I mean, let's get real. The whole galaxy is changing. Definitely our solar system is changing. And many scientists that are familiar with space and astronomers know that all the planets are heating up. Now, why is that happening? Well, the galaxy and the solar system is aligning itself with the star Alcyone, which is the sister star to our sun. And as that's happening, we are entering the photon belt, or the photon band, as it's alternately called. And so there are higher energies coming here, which are going to raise the frequency of the Earth one way or the other. And those of us that can raise our frequencies along with that of the Earth are the ones that are going to move into a higher dimension. So there is going to be a temperature change, but it's not the catastrophe that they're making it out to be. Now, is industrial manufacturing and the creation of wars around the planet doing anything to help this? I don't think so. I wonder what setting off a nuclear explosion does to the overall temperature of the Earth. I wonder what the manipulation of weather and the manipulation of earthquakes, artificial earthquakes, whether they're under the sea or in the mountains, or the running of HAARP and spraying toxins in our atmosphere have an impact on it. I would guess they do. And they serve several purposes, masking what's going on out in space and in our upper atmosphere. And then if you have cloud cover, it's going to hold heat closer to the surface. It's not going to escape into the higher altitudes. So it's sort of an oxymoron type of statement that they're feeding us. And Al Gore hasn't addressed any of those issues. And then you have the issue of destroying the Amazon rainforest, cutting down trees left and right all over the planet and not replacing them, not replacing the ecosystem that's being destroyed. So the ecosystem is being destroyed on a multidimensional scale. And it's not all related to water. It's not all related to temperature, but it does affect those things. The melting of the polar ice caps has something to do with it, but it could very well be the experimentation going on in the ocean causing these currents to flow. And I remember when I was in L.A. For 10.5 years, and we had a drought for 8 years, and all of a sudden it rained, and this new term for a weather pattern came out. I don't know if you had heard about it. They called it El Nino, the kid.
Yeah.
You remember that garbage that they spewed at us, and I haven't been on the coast for some time. Maybe some listener will call in or email us and let us know if they're still using that term in Los Angeles. But for 3 or 4 years, we have El Nino, and it was like an inversion of the effect. They were blaming it on weather patterns coming off of the Pacific Ocean, and for some reason, it had to have a Spanish name. They had to give it a personality, Santa Ana winds, you know.
I was just going to say they want to keep in step with the Santa Ana winds, you know.
Yeah. Well, you get my point. I mean, this is the kind of garbage that they feed us. They come up with these terms likely they were experimenting on something, and they, you know, it was their new version of swamp gas. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, only God knows what they're experimenting with, but, you know, we should always bear in mind that, that the planet will only tolerate so much, and any human being that really and truly thinks that his presence here, or our presence as an entire species here, is mandatory for the success of the planet, is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there have been mass extinctions many, many times. You ask any paleontologist, and they'll tell you, more species have been wiped out than are alive today. And there's no reason why we can't join that roster. And we should bear that in mind. It's a humbling thought.
Well, yeah, not that I want to promote the eating of animals, but animals do have an impact on the health of these ecosystems. There is such a thing as a food chain in nature, and it has much to do with the replication of plant life as well. I'm sure you would agree, and it's directly associated to water. The animals and the plants don't get the water, they die too.
But oh, there absolutely.
Are, you know, there are carnivores that depend on the animals that do, eat plants. And there are animals that eat plants that depend on those plants being healthy. And it seems that, there seems to be no one in power that really cares about those things. They like to talk about preserves and preserving the nature. And what do? They seal off those areas that people could enjoy and take them over for covert purposes.
You know, don't forget, though, you touched on a very, very interesting point, whether it was deliberate or not, and that is...
It was.
These people that are in control, and I almost hate to use the term, except that there's no other way to describe them. They're not right. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to. You can't spend your entire life plotting all these things that they're involved with and subtracting yourself from immersion in the real world and then expect to understand what you have elected to insulate yourself from. And I think it gets worse with every generation. I mean, I had an article that I actually wanted to read on one of your shows, and I couldn't find the darn thing. But basically what it was a series of interviews that were given with various politicians, both in federal government and state governments, and also in various municipalities around the country. And it wasn't even addressing complex issues like the ones that we're talking about now. It was addressing relatively mundane things that you would expect someone with at least as much consciousness as a sponge would have. And they just absolutely massacred, you know, the answers. And these are the people that are leading us. And that's the reason why I wanted to get it on the show, because it was funny, I have to admit, but it was funny in an extraordinarily pathetic way.
Mm-hmm.
My only point in delivering this, Don, is if these people at those levels are that ignorant, you're not going to find anything better at the higher levels. I think that they're going to be even more divorced from reality or the consequences of their actions. And a very dear friend of mine who has studied the human brain for most of his life, I was just having a conversation with him on this very issue earlier today, and he's divided basically human nature into two major categories. And that's actually quite interesting when you consider the evidence that he has to support these conclusions he's come to. One he calls the prospective thinkers, and the other he calls the retrospective thinker. And the prospective people are those who are gifted with the ability to analyze facts in such a manner that they can see patterns and can project patterns forward in time so that they can get a feel for the consequences of things that may occur as a result of things that are happening now. So it gives them a sort of a window into the future.
Mm-hmm.
The other individuals don't seem to have that gift, but they're much more aggressive than the people who do have that gift. They go through life in a manner which I can't comprehend completely, because I really think that I am probably of the other species. But they go through life in a manner wherein they analyze and project data based only on successful past experiences. And so it's like driving through a crowded street in New York City at breakneck speed, but you're only looking in the rearview mirror. Now, that's a horrifying thought. But the interesting thing is that type of individual is the one that usually winds up in governmental posts. And this guy has done enough research to support the fact that certain character types wind up in certain places. And he says that the majority of the people that are running the show are the ones with the aggressive personalities, but they have retrospective analytical capacities. And when they get into, they can mumble along fairly successfully by acquainting themselves with things that other people did in the past and imitating those apparent successes, which is one reason why every group of politicians seems to be a mirror image, not a mirror image, a carbon copy of earlier ones. But what tells them apart in a very obvious manner is when they come to a condition where they have to make a decision under pressure, and they can't make a choice. So what they do is they procrastinate. And while they're procrastinating, with all manner of excuses that political people generate, what they're actually doing is giving a chance for an intellectual source or an intellectual crutch of some sort to make an appearance. And usually that type of individual is a prospective thinker. And they will then tie their wagon onto that person and use that guy's ability to make their next round of decisions. And the thing about it that's interesting is that seems to be very parallel to the situation with this Al Gore thing that you just brought up. You know, you have all these people that don't know what to do about the changing global situation, and rather than do the obvious thing, which would be to eliminate or at least make an attempt to clean up the sources of all the problems that we're aware of, they wouldn't want to do that because that would rock the political boat. So they just procrastinate with all this other rubbish that they come along with until some shining star comes over the horizon with a brilliant idea. And in this case, it seems like one of them, at least, is Al Gore with his theories about global warming. And then everyone is so relieved because they now have identified the new direction, and they forge ahead with all of the excitement and all of the conviction that they are now going to accomplish something. But in reality, they are no different than the herds that they blame us for being. Because now they've got somebody else to follow, and they go off on this tangential direction, and they're no more certain of the outcome than anybody else is, but they figure, well, I can survive for one more day. That's the attitude. I'll survive for one more day. We'll get through another day, and I'll still be able to put that paycheck in the bank. And that's all I care about. So they don't have the ability to look into the future and say, well, what the heck are the long-term consequences of my actions or the actions of the people that I'm lobbying for?
Yes, in respect to what you just said, in particular about Al Gore, I would postulate that he's no more responsible for writing the material that he's been given credit for on this global warming issue than Barack Obama is for writing his own speeches. These people are just mouthpieces for those that want to hide the truth. What is so wrong with bringing the truth out about anything? Well, you know, it foils their plans. As you mentioned early on in the show, this is nothing but pure insanity. And it's just more of the same type of spin, more propaganda. It has no scientific basis, in fact, even in the pseudo-scientific realm. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about pseudoscience and alchemy, but it's not universal alchemy in any way, shape, or form. As if it's a satanic ritual that they're practicing. So the substance that and the credit that they give to Al Gore for going out, he's made some money. But you better believe that the person that did the writing got a nice chunk of money and another chunk to be quiet about it. You know, that's how it's done. That's how the business is done. And it's just a mind control issue. It's just propaganda intended to dumb us down further, to lower our vibration. But the discussion we're having right now is having the adverse effect upon that whole mission.
Well, I certainly hope so, because otherwise, you know, left to their own devices, we're going to wind up in a very pathetic situation sooner or later. But getting back to the qualities of water, as you pointed out, Don, all these living creatures, not only we humans, but also the animals of the world and the countless variety of plants and probably the earth itself in manners that we don't understand at this point all rely on the miracle of water. And, you know, all of this acts in a holistic way on the planet. And that's another thing that irks me. There have been people who have given their whole lives to understanding holistic systems. And they are always labeled as oddballs. They are always persecuted for being different. And the attention is always directed on how they differ from the rest of society instead of focusing on materials that they have given their lives to understand. And two people that rise to the top in that direction and are related to the subject matter of tonight's discussion are Victor Schoberger and Wilhelm Reich. And, you know, those people were both persecuted and eventually done away with by the system. But what they were trying to advocate was the importance of understanding our planet and our lives and all of the things that happen in a much more holistic way, instead of just looking at one aspect of something and then artificially inflating the importance of that particular observation. You know, a very wonderful way to understand the message that I'm trying to give in that respect is you can take an animal, like a little puppy, for instance, and as cruel as this might sound, you can come along now and chop it into small parts and investigate the cross sections of the animal. You can take the guts out and investigate them. You can look at the various cellular components. You can study its chemistry, and you can write numerous and very wonderful books and reports on all that you did as a result of dissecting and mutilating this animal. But you won't really learn anything about the dog. The only thing you will learn is some interrelated aspects of the sub sections of this animal. The only way that you can really study and learn about the puppy is if you understand it holistically. And it's very strange that we really don't have, in our scientific system, it doesn't seem to embrace the ability to do this. And I've often pondered on why that is so. And I think it has something to do with the fact that our science is so segmented that it transmits that tendency into our thinking. And we tend to view things in a manner that is simpler for us to comprehend, but it also puts compartments, it constructs compartments in the process of doing this that prevent us from seeing the whole picture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're never going to understand the life of a puppy after you've dissected it and cut it all to pieces, even if you gain some insights into the various parts. And that's one of the reasons why some of these diseases and other problems have never been solved. Like Reich tried to point out, cancer falls into that category. You can study tumors for a whole lifetime, and you might learn all about tumors, but you won't learn anything about cancer, because cancer is a holistic disease that affects the entire human being. And the tumor is nothing more than a manifestation of that disease. You know, mm-hmm. if a guy has measles and you study the measles, individual measles, and the little bumps that appear on the face, you're going to learn really about the bumps. You're not going to learn about why he's got them. And that's the same thing that we're doing with some of these diseases that there are no cures for. We're not looking at the whole picture. And the reason I'm drawing that comparison is because we're not doing it with Earth either.
Yes, absolutely. I would comment on your holistic remark and just say simply that holistic science or holistic medicine or anything holistic is going to lead one to the truth. And science has become an industry. What I guess I could compare it, if I were to compare it to music, it's called marching in time. There's a lot of leg movement, but there's no forward thrust. There's no moving from one place to another. It's giving the appearance that there's some research going on, but they're more concerned about how long they can take to arrive at a solution, because they make more money over time than they do in coming up with a solution. Again, it's insane. It's another form of insanity.
And I agree with you fully. I have seen that very mechanism at work so many times in my career that I can't even tell you. And it disgusted me to the point where I have actually left very high-paying jobs because I couldn't stand it. In one particular situation, and I won't mention any names simply because of the fact that I don't feel like rocking the boat too much, but a very, very large international corporation that I worked for, and we were involved in a very, very big project, a power generating project. And I would routinely see things that were so unforgivably stupid, but they were tolerated as part of the overall procedure. And finally, when I brought this to the attention of somebody, you know, just to try to understand what the heck they were doing it for, the answer that I got was the only thing truthful that I experienced in the whole time I was with them. And that was, he says, well, you make a lot more money if you can extend the contract to be 7 years long instead of 3 years long. And, of course, the fact that the financial overrides were in the billions of dollars supports that conclusion. So 90% of the time, they're much more interested in perpetuating the time that it takes to do something so they can pocket more cash than they are in ever reaching the goal. And when they reach the goal, it's almost a surprise. It's, hey, we're done. Didn't think we'd ever get here. And, that's an attitude I can't live with.
Well, see, that's mirrored in what we've been talking about tonight, too, and that's the manipulation of our ecosystem, the pollution of our water, the manner in which it's delivered to us, whether it's sold as ordinary tap water. You know, they say nowadays don't use tap water for anything other than washing your floors. Do you think I'm going to put my floors through that? I've got more respect for my floors. I really don't see any point in having tap water anymore. That's how bad it's gotten. So we're just witnessing silly excuses to just continue things as they have been for so many years because they're making money hand over fist and dumbing us down. It's like the people that go into the restaurant and they order a bottle of Perrier or some other highbrow drinking water, and then they ask for a glass of ice. Now, my goodness, what do you think they're making the ice from? And that reminds me of a 12-year-old girl. I think you and I talked about this on a show last year. I came across this on the Internet. This 12-year-old girl, for a science project at school, decided she was going to test the water in restaurants. And she went to something like 20 restaurants in her town. And she asked for permission to go into the restrooms and test the water coming out of the sink. She took some samples of toilet water. And then she took samples of the water being served at the table, at the tables in the restaurant. And the cleanest water was the water in the toilet. Number two was the water coming out of the sink, and the dirtiest water, the most germ-infested water, was what they were serving at the table. It took a 12-year-old girl to do that experiment. Now, she got an A on that, but do you think the health department went in there and cleaned things up? No, because the medical community thrives on creating new patients, and every possible way they can keep a person sick, keeps them selling drugs, and doesn't require them to come up with a cure. They would prefer that we spend the money on masking the symptoms. And in the case of that city water being so filthy, they mask the symptoms by either not reporting the story or by spinning it somehow. They would attack the 12-year-old girl as having made some gross error in the scientific process, we'll say, that she must have made some mistake and got her specimens mixed up somehow, mislabeled them, or put them in contaminated containers. You get my drift.
And oh, I know, yeah. So, no, I get your drift completely. But, you know, it's all very easy to talk out of the other side of your mouth. Half of the studies that these so-called medical organizations provide are actually done in the same way that they're blaming her for being negligent about. You know, it's like they basically manipulate data to suit their ends. And who pays for these studies? That's the other thing that's worth worrying about. It usually is the same people that want to sell you the very thing that is being endorsed. So it's like having the fox guard the hen house. I mean, it makes no sense. But we accept it as a way of life. And that's the thing that bothers me. What the heck is wrong with people if they can't put all this stuff together? I think that the amount of insulting information is so intense that people deliberately shield their psyche from it because if they allowed it to make an impact, they couldn't function in life. That's how bad it is. But the only problem with that is, Don, sooner or later, there's going to be an implosion because your psyche can only strain out or shield off so much of this stuff before the burden becomes overwhelming. It's much more realistic to take the bull by the horns and contend with the truth. And until we do that, we're going to be in the same boat we've been in for the last couple hundred years. I'm sorry to say.
You know, I keep waiting, Jim, for the day when our higher selves wake us up, slapping us silly in the face, to realize what we're doing to ourselves just by allowing this to go on and permitting it as if, well, it's the way things are. What can you do about it? I'm just one person. It's always been that way. I mean, we can come up with millions of excuses for not doing anything about it. And this is not to say that there aren't people doing something about it, because I personally know people in all aspects of water treatment and water potability and water technologies that are making efforts. They're taking efforts to bring solutions to people. The problem is that they're doing it to a dumbed down audience. You know, it's like we're not just the audience; we're the actors in the play too. And we can't figure out if we've bought a ticket or we're actually in the dress rehearsal. If you get my meaning.
I do. Yeah, and we've discussed that before too. And you know, I think as painful as it is, we have to contend with the fact that there is a natural distribution of consciousness that makes up some sort of a bell curve. And unfortunately, most of the people that make up the masses are apparently in a vegetative state. And that's, I don't know if that's their nature or if that's just where they're comfortable or if they're brainwashed to be that way, but until we can shift that bell curve into a much more pronounced resonance curve where you've got a lot more people aware of what's going on, things are going to remain the same.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that brings me to a point where I really like to interject another quality of water, because I think that it's one of the most important things. Every major religion that has ever graced this earth with its presence has always commented on the fact that water is a highly spiritual substance. And not for the superficial reasons that we often hear about, like, for instance, blessed water or holy water or whatever. Not that there's nothing to that, but, I mean, there's more to it than we're given to understand, and that's the point I want to make. It has now been proven scientifically that the concept of saying grace over food or blessing food before you eat it actually has a great deal of value. And what happens is that the psychic intent of that blessing affects the water molecules in the food that you're about to eat, and it actually causes an increase in its nutritive value, and it accelerates the body's ability to make proper absorption of nutrients from that food. And this is a function of the water that's in the material that you're eating. And so there is something profoundly spiritual about water, not only in the traditional sense, but in the actual sense, because it is capable of responding to an intent. Now, an intent is not something physical. At very best, you can describe it as an energy projected electromagnetically. So, since we can't see that form of energy, I'm forced to conclude it's something spiritual. So water is capable of being acted upon by spiritual forces. And the outcome can be very positive. And there's a Japanese doctor, I don't remember his name, I'm sorry to say, but he spent the last 20 or 30 years experimenting with water's response to human intent. And he found that when you, and I don't know how he did it, but he has several books on the subject, he invented instrumentation that allows him to monitor the instantaneous crystalline state of water, and he can literally watch it change with intent. And he's published a book, and I have a copy of it somewhere, but unfortunately my belongings are scattered over six states, so I don't remember where the heck it is at the moment. But he actually shows pictures that he has taken of these water crystals, or these water, they're not really molecules, they're groups of molecules that are of a certain size, and he can isolate that. But then he takes pictures of this, and of course it's the same water, but it's responding to different intentions. And he has a whole series of these photographs with the intention that was projected listed under the pictures. And what's interesting is the ones that are of a higher spiritual nature, like love, health, prosperity, all these types of things, show extraordinarily beautiful patterns, always symmetrical, always sharp-edged crystals, something like snowflakes, actually, and very beautiful to look at. Whereas the negative intentions of, like, hatred, disease, failure, all of these other things, low esteem, you know, things like that, the very opposite thing happens. You have these lopsided things make an appearance. They're often asymmetrical rather than symmetrical. They have completely divided characteristics. Like some of them are very crystalline on one side and all look almost like they're melted on the other side. You know, very bizarre things in contrast to the positive aspects. And so, you know, this is something that we should bear in mind also. We go through life with the blinders on our eyes, and it's so annoying. We complain about all this stuff in our everyday lives and how life is just mundane and there's nothing, you know, nothing more to be done except keep your nose to the grindstone and look for a few minutes of entertainment to break the monotony. And actually, all this stuff is going on that's trying to tell us that we live in a world which is essentially a miracle. Every blessed thing that you want to investigate is a universe unto itself. Where is the interest? Where is the passion? What the heck is wrong with people that they can't see what they've really got? Do you realize that if only a handful of individuals around the world that had the resources behind them decided to investigate and make the best of whatever was to be found in all of these various aspects of investigation that could be looked into, they'd actually change the planet. But it never happens. The most disappointing thing for me has been the realization that those people who have the wherewithal to make the greatest changes are always the ones who do the least. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. If I could comment on a couple of things you said, you sparked some spiritual recognition, at least in what you were saying. I recognize the parallels in what you're saying, and I'm about to agree with what you said in saying that the person that prays over their food, for instance, if we were to pray over water the same way, with a sense of gratitude, we would be blessed just by that. I've been reading Dr. Kasem Khalil's The Secret Scriptures, and this was the scriptures of Jesus, the testament of Jesus, transcribed by Barnabas. And every time in this testament Jesus said a prayer, he began, and for all intents and purposes, the prayer consisted almost 100% of gratitude to God. He would praise God and acknowledge all the things that God has done. And the last thing that came out of his lips was the request. But the majority of the prayer was this sense of gratitude. Now, the highest form, I would think, of energy that one could put into their food or into their body, as you described, to enable them to assimilate the food in the most optimal manner to get nourishment from the food, would be to approach a prayer, or if you want to call it a ritual, a recognition, or coming to a place spiritually where you raise your vibration by going up to the frequency of love through which everything was created out of love. Imagine what we could do. Imagine how we could clean up water just by applying that love frequency, possibly just through prayer it could be done. And the concept you brought up, holy water, for example, or blessed water, is there anything special about one molecule of water over another? Is there any reason why all water should not be thought of as holy or sacred? If you get down to it, if we clean up the water, it will be exactly that way, and we won't have to differentiate or imagine that water has a particular use at one particular time, and there's only one individual that's capable of bringing that to us. And that's the type of mindset that we're in, is that we don't realize our own nature. We don't realize our creative powers that God gave us, and we depend on others to do those things for us. So, yeah, even spiritually, I would say we're dumbed down as much as we are educationally.
I have to agree with you, and your insight into the idea of the one messenger, the one supplier, the one person who knows. That is so annoying to me, and yet it appears over and over again in everything. I mean, we have essentially one company supplying, fuels. We have one company supplying electricity. We have one company supplying, medical relief. We have one company supplying pharmaceuticals. We have one company supplying food. Now, it doesn't really look that way because it's fractionalized into so many outlets. But if you really did your homework, you'd find out that there is really only one company. And it's the same old story. Why did it get that way? It got that way because we let it get that way. You know, there was a time when people didn't mind raising their own food. There was a time when people didn't have any problem with taking a responsibility on their own shoulders, regardless of what it was, from fixing an engine to healing an illness. Those were things that were looked upon as normal everyday activities that were pursued by everyday people. But nowadays, it's very obvious that we have sheep and we have shepherds. And the shepherds fleece the sheep.
Period. Oh, yeah, the shepherds are the wolves, really.
Well, that's the point. They're wolves in sheep's clothing. Is what I'm trying to
say. While you were saying what you were saying, what also comes to mind too, and there's truth in what you said. They give us three choices always. They give us the high price, the middle price, and the bargain price. And we generally assume the quality is going to be the highest and the higher price. and some of us are willing to settle on the basis of price alone for the middle quality or the low quality just to get by, as if those are the only choices we have. My good friend Michael Herzog likes to refer to our political choices in during this campaign as the difference between caca, poo-poo, and feces. He sort of lays it out, and really, that's pretty accurate. Those are the types of choices we're given. And so these products that are paraded before our lustful eyes and our lust to be competitive and better than our next-door neighbor, keeping up with the Joneses, it's called, cause us to miss out on really the worth of being alive and having a higher quality life. Because if we were aware of our higher gifts, we would also be aware of what the earth could provide for us. And we would understand immediately if it was to our benefit or our demise to ingest certain products. They merely present them in different manners to give us a different perspective of the same thing. If you get my drift there. I mean, whether it's the taste or the color or the packaging, it's all the same crap.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the interesting thing is what you're suggesting or what you're implying is the fact that we have been forcibly removed from the cosmic gestalt. And as a result of that, we are basically like lost sheep. We're disconnected from our true heritage, which is spiritual. And we wander around looking for someone to give us guidance. And the very people that give us the guidance are the ones that are the wolves, who essentially devour us all. And we're too disconnected to realize that. You know, there was a very interesting experiment that was done, and I think it's been repeated numerous times, where they tracked the activities of small herbivores, usually rabbits, and they watch what they eat. And they also watch what else is available in these meadows where they are. Now, you've got lots of poisonous plants. I forget the names of some of them, but anyway, that are growing naturally in that environment. And it's very interesting that the rabbits that are running wild and they're part of the gestalt of nature, they know that they're not supposed to eat that. And they don't. They just go around and they eat the grasses and the succulents and the things that are good for them, and they stay away from the poisonous plants. Now, what's interesting is if you take the same rabbit and you put him in a cage and you disorient him from, you know, what his normal surroundings, and then you start feeding him so that he becomes reliant upon you, he is now disconnected from the big picture, from the gestalt. And as a result of that, if you take some of those same poisonous poisonous plants that grow in that field that he used to be in and put it in his feed bowl, he'll eat it and die. And that's a very, very amazing thing. Why is that? I don't know the exact explanation for it, except for the fact that an artificial trust and a dependency seems to be formed under those conditions, so that you forget your natural training or your natural reliance upon a higher consciousness, and you now focus so intently on that hand which is supplying you what you need. And you don't question what you're given. You accept it blindly. It's kind of like what happens to a person when they're kidnapped and they start to rely on the kidnapper. I forget what that's called, but there is a whole syndrome that's been investigated around that. And we've all been kidnapped. That's what it comes down to. The human race has been kidnapped away from its natural spiritual heritage. We look down on people like the Aborigines. We look down on people like the remaining tribes in the Amazon and the American Indian. And yet, those are the ones that retained God's gift. We are the fallen angels. When you start to look at the story of Adam and Eve, I think it's exactly what happened. The whole concept of original sin, I don't know what spurred that legend, but I think it's an attempt to describe the fact that the fall from grace was really our disconnect from a higher spiritual source and our decision to embrace a totally artificial way of life.
Yes.
And look where it has brought us.
Yeah, your description of the rabbit metaphysically is just cutting the rabbit off from its source. There's a source deprivation occurring when the animal is caged, and it cannot express itself in the fullness that it can when it's free. And that's the same symptom we're going through, whether it's in our education, whether it's in the propaganda that we're fed, the mind control, and whether it's subliminal or on a conscious level. You put the right amount of drugs and toxins into the human body, and it cannot possibly function as it was designed to function. You know, and that leads us to the point where we should maybe talk about some cures for all of this insanity.
Well, that's a tall order. I mean, I have given that a lot of thought, and I think that you and I have both concluded that the main cure has to be the acceptance of what's really happening. If you don't even realize what's being done to you, and you're trained to believe that this is a wonderful and desirable way of life, if you can't break out of that false paradigm, how are you gonna take the next step? How are you going to clean up the situation if you don't even know that there's a problem? But once you do that, I mean, once you do break through and you start realizing what's going on, then we have to attack and change the power centers that have been artificially created. Because the very people that we look to for guidance, for support, for leadership, for all those supposedly worthwhile attributes are actually designed with a secret agenda, which is just the opposite of their appearance. And
yes,
until we come to that conclusion and are willing to face it, they're going to win.
When, not to correct your use of the word acceptance, I think if I were to say we have accepted what we've been given, maybe acknowledgement might be just a more appropriate word, that we don't use the same word to fix the problem. In other words, if we acknowledge that this has occurred and that we have accepted this, we don't have to accept it any longer, and we can acknowledge that there may be another solution. If you get my drift.
There's always another solution. That's one thing that we always can look forward to. The universe is so rich, it's so pregnant with alternatives. It doesn't even matter what you're investigating. I guarantee you, there's an infinity behind every single thing you choose to look at. So we should remember that. The same applies here, you know, with respect to our plight as human beings in the modern world. If we really want to reach out to the universe and say, what the heck can we do to better this situation? As we talked about in other shows, you know, and take the meditative path, be open to suggestions from the universe, other alternatives will be given. They always are. It's nothing new. The problem is that we don't do it. Or at least enough of us don't do it. Maybe that's a better thing to say.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyone that's listening to the show tonight, I'm sure, is being stirred up a bit in thinking about these issues. And we, you and I, Jim, are by no means the only people that bring these topics up. We're both well aware of that. It's for the benefit of the listening audience that I acknowledge that there are many people that are quite familiar with these things and probably much more adept at tackling these issues. You know, my interest, you know this about me personally, that my interest is in the healing capacity of music. And it incorporates all the things that you were talking about. In fact, you and I discussed an idea I have for an invention, and that invention uses water, if you recall me, year and a half ago sharing that with you. It's not an accident. In fact, the more we talk about this topic, the more I realize that I've hit on something. And even with my peripheral affiliation with Dr. Len Horowitz and the Perfect Circle of Sound, the sacred frequencies that we're retuning music to be more in harmony with our natural selves, the way the universe is created, is it ironic that next year we have a concert prepared? Which is the concert of the living waters. I mean, we're going to be honoring water, and we're going to be playing these frequencies with the intention of healing the water through the music. Very lofty concept. It's never been done before on the scale that we're going to do it. It's going to be going on all over the planet at the same time. And there are more people coming on board. It's things like this that we must awaken to. And these are very lofty concepts, but there are people jumping on board to participate in this. And I give Dr. Horowitz credit for seeing this, that that's a possibility, that we can take a proactive, stance and affect the change through our God-given creative, gifts. There's no reason why we shouldn't do that. And there's no reason why we shouldn't approach our everyday lives in that fashion. We seem, you know, you talked about the procrastinators in the scientific field, the people that never, ever arrive at a solution because they're too busy explaining away why they don't feel like doing it now. And those that have the desire have the feeling, much like you said. The feeling is everything. It has everything to do with our abilities. If it doesn't feel right, it probably doesn't feel right because it isn't right or it isn't the best solution. And the more we start using those faculties, the more they become developed, the more acute they become. And we rise, as we raise our vibrations personally, we then raise our vibration collectively, and it has to impact the earth. As you well said, and correctly, the earth is alive. The earth has a consciousness, and it will respond to our raising of consciousness, and it will bless us by assisting us further in raising our consciousness, as will the rest of the universe. That's what we've really moved away from. We've moved away from who we really are, and we've accepted nothing but illusions about who we are by people that are good at nothing but creating illusions and living them themselves. And probably the darkest illusion of all they've created is their own egos and who they think they really are, their own arrogance and their own perversions. They're the other side of the coin in every respect.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, Don. You know, there's an old legend that says that the enslavement of humanity was accomplished by one major step, and that was the destruction of magic. And, you know, people probably don't realize what that really means, but it's not M-A-G-I-C, it's M-I-G-I-K. which, if you look into it, is essentially the awareness of our godlike qualities and our abilities to use them to make a better world here. And once that's stripped away, you're like the rabbit in the cage. And that was done deliberately. There's no question about that. Dumbing down wasn't just the ABCs, reading, writing, and arithmetic. It was a whole lot more than that. And it's been going on for a long time, too. It didn't just start here in the United States. It's been going on for centuries. And you know as well as I do who's been involved in that. But the fact of the matter is, the connection is still there, even if it's a very subtle one. We all have that connection to our birthright, to our true spiritual source. And all we have to do is exactly what you just said. Strengthen it. Utilize it. Learn to trust it. The more you do, the stronger it'll get. It's no different than building a muscle. It's no different than conditioning a body. You have to condition your spirit as well. And I got news for you. The dark side knows this, and they fear it ultimately.
Oh, yes.
They are more afraid of our enlightenment than anything else. And, you know, why else would they kill off everybody that's enlightened? Look at the recent intellectual revolution, or whatever they called it, in China. The first thing they did was kill everybody that that had intellectual capacity. They burned all the books. They basically stripped their land of all of the things that are required for free thought and higher thought, so that they could get them in goose step with the new policies. And that's the same thing that's always done. And it's been done to us, and we have to realize that and take steps to repair that damage.
Mm-hmm. You know, they like to call themselves, although they're not doing it so much these days, but those that have become aware become aware of their secret names, and they refer to themselves often as the Illuminati or the Illuminated Ones. Well, if we think of being illuminated in their sense as a light bulb, right now they're sort of operating sort of like a 4-watt bulb, if you know what I mean, the kind that you might find on a night light. There's not a lot of brilliance coming out of their illumination on a spiritual plane. And they rely so much on really the darkness. It's an oxymoron what they call themselves.
Well, it is predictable. It is predictable because if you track back and examine what really allowed them to gain the plateau of power that they now enjoy. It really came from the fact that after the fall of Atlantis, when the survivors went to different colonies, they brought residual knowledge with them to places like Egypt and South America and other parts of the world, probably China, definitely India, places like that. And various secret societies held on to that information because initially it was thought to be too sacred for the common masses to get a hold of. And so it was transmitted underground down through the ages. Well, then it didn't take long for that to be subverted to the point where they said, well, wait a minute, we can use this information, you know, to gain control over the masses and thereby lift ourselves up to a position of prominence on the planet. But what they don't realize is that their fear of this information getting out, and it's not just, you know, technological, it covers a whole bandwidth of spiritual, you know, economic, you know, social, all types of information. You can see remnants of it in the Rosicrucians, in other secret organizations, the Masons, the Knights Templar. I mean, the Knights Templar is a good example because they latched on to the concepts of abstract ownership. They were the first banking organizations in the world, and they got that information from an older source. It's on record, for God's sake. You could check it out in the, if you take the trouble to read the translations that came out of places like India and Egypt. You know, that kind of knowledge existed on Earth thousands of years ago.
Sure.
So anyway, the point is that in their ability to, I'm sorry, not in their ability, but in their drive to protect this knowledge that allowed them to have the power, every time that they thought something was leaking out and they squelched it or changed it or modified what was allowed to manifest in the public domain, it eventually degraded what they had. They're not the same. These so-called Illuminati, which are now, you know, the 4-watt night lamps, they are a far cry. They are a far cry from the 1,000-watt bulbs that used to shine 200 years ago. They're just as dumbed down as we are.
Well,
on a different level. But
yeah,
it's happening to them, too.
Absolutely. There's a bit of a dichotomy in what they do because they recognize the law of cause and effect, but what they haven't realized is they've paid so much attention to keeping it secret that they caused it to come out through that fear, that very fear.
Yeah, and you can see, for instance, if you take a so-called modern financial magnate, let's look at one individual just as an example. Take Donald Trump. He may be a very successful guy. He may be very wealthy, et cetera, et cetera. But just compare him to what was the name of the guy that gave Tesla such a hard time?
J.P. Morgan.
Yeah, that's the name I was looking for. Compare Trump to J.P. Morgan. And you can see the decline, even though they're in the same field. I mean, J.P. Morgan was into everything. That guy was actually brilliant. He was well-educated. He knew stuff about everything that he touched. And that's why he was so successful. You know, Trump is a very watered-down version of that.
Yes. Well, even J.P. Morgan or Rockefeller or Bronfman or any of the other names, the Rothschilds, all of those people were agents for someone else. They were not the top, you know, they weren't the cream that rose to the top. They were right below the surface. That's part of the game. That's part of the secrecy that they played on us. And that's something I've written about in this new article that's coming out as well. I'm not pumping the article. I'm just mentioning the fact that when you read that article, you're going to get a little bit of more revealing of the truth behind the history. We've been led to believe that, and don't get me wrong, I'm agreeing with you that these people have accumulated a tremendous amount of power through the illusions they've created, but it's only been through the illusions. What have they done positive? Oh, they can say, well, they created these foundations and they gave some money to the poor, but that was just to cover their behinds so that they weren't strung up from the nearest street lamp on any given day or any given moment in any given day as people uncovered the corruption that they were involved in. But now we're in a point in our history, Jim, and we've got to end the show here in a minute or so. We're at a point in our history where the truth is coming out so rapidly and so intensely that there's not a thing they can do to stop it. They can try to ramp up their New World Order plans and try to crush some shifting of consciousness, but they've focused on their fear of us waking up for so long that they've actually helped us to wake up. And it's become quite obvious what the game is. So
yeah, I have to agree with you. You know, I keep on thinking about that line from the first Star Wars movie where Princess Leia is addressing the governor on the space station, and she says, the tighter you squeeze your hand, the more of us, you know, will escape from the system. And that's basically what's happening. I mean, they're so panic-stricken to achieve their objective that they're becoming really sloppy. I mean, just look at some of the stuff that's been done in the last 2 years. It's got a certain signature written all over it. And even the people who don't ever address these issues are beginning to say, what the heck is going on here? You know, they're starting to realize that there are other things afoot.
Yes. Well, Jim, it's been a fantastic 2 hours and 15 minutes or so. Actually, we got started maybe 5 minutes late, so, you know, we're soon approaching that time, though. And Seth's got to get home before he turns into a pumpkin. but he did give us an extra 15 minutes. I didn't even mention that to you. You and I have done some three-hour shows last year, and we can probably go on for five or six without losing our breath. I want to compliment you on a wonderful presentation. And, you know, we certainly can revisit this topic, as we always do. And I just want to express my gratitude on the behalf of the listening audience. I'm sure many people are going to feel very inspired by the things you had to say tonight.
Well, I appreciate that. And, yes, we can revisit it any time. But, you know, you brought up a point just in your closing remarks that might make for an incredible show. I would really like to do a whole disclosure on Seth turning into a pumpkin. I mean, that would be amazing.
Okay, we might have to invite his wife on here, too. Seth, thank you very much. You did a great job tonight. The sound was excellent. And, Jim, I'm going to say goodnight to the listening audience for us. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. And we've come to the end of another week, so please come back and see us next week. All through the week, we're going to have some great guests on. Also, visit my website, DirectLightProductions.com. Got some real interesting reading coming out next week, and we're very excited about it, and we're hoping you are, because finally the truth is going to be told. And special thanks go out to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Again, Seth, thanks for great sound. Thank you, all the listening audience, especially Renee, Bill, and Linda, and everyone else across the country that's been wishing us the best, praying for us, and supporting us, bringing the truth to you. With that, I'm going to wish everyone a wonderful night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.